today I'm going to be talking about atomic dark matter and how we've been starting to probe it using simulated subhalo populations. And so this is my list of collaborators, and so this is work that we published sort of towards the end of last year. And this, I should acknowledge the support of the McDonald's Institute and the Canadian First Research Excellence Fund. Sweet, so first I'll just sort of give an outline about what atomic dark matter is and how we're using in-body simulations to study it. But sort of the main three big questions I want to quickly answer in this talk is, how does atomic dark matter change sort of the dark matter subhalo substructure? Do these differences affect the subhalo distributions? And also quickly at the end is, do these differences affect satellite galaxies and how we might sort of continue to study these? So a quick recap is, so we know that Lambda CDM does a good job of matching data on the large astrophysical scales, but there's still a variety of substructure problems that still exist on small subgalactic scales. And so essentially just want to probe atomic dark matter on these scales, and sort of the big question is always, can we sort of distinguish a Milky Way-like galaxy if it was consisted of CDM versus atomic dark matter? And so additionally, atomic dark matter is an implementation of a complex dark sector, so this has its own sort of theoretical motivations where it can address natural issues such as a little hierarchy problem. And people have been interested in these complex dark sectors because they're sort of inspired by the complexity of this standard model. And so when we talk about ADM, we're essentially just referring to a sort of dark Hewitt gauge group where you have two particles oppositely charged with a mass gap and that they can interact with their own sort of dark photon. Regarding how this actually is implemented in the simulations, so this is a modified Gizmo code. So Gizmo was done by Phil Hopkins, and then the modifications were done by Sandy Broy, Miranda Lasanti, as well as others. And so just as a recap, in the simulations, we have our cold dark matter particles that can only interact gravitationally, and we have our standard model baryons. So they start as sort of gas particles with temperature, pressure, and then as they sort of evolve and can cool and collapse, they can reach, become genes unstable and collapse into stars. And those stars can then also undergo feedback and supernova, and lots of complex processes can happen. And so essentially what ADM does is just copies that over to the dark sector, where a subcomponent of our total dark matter budget is this atomic dark matter, where we have atomic dark matter gas, and this atomic dark matter gas can cool and fragment, but instead of forming stars, they form what we call clumps, which is essentially like at the resolution scale of our simulations, what could be dark stars, dark compact objects, a lot of interesting things down there, but just below the resolution of our simulations. Importantly, I want to stress is that ADM does not have feedback. So when there's no dark supernovas or any of that business, we're sort of assuming just dark electrons, dark protons, and dark atoms of hydrogen are forming. So in this talk, I'll just quickly go through these four simulations, which I'll refer to. We do a standard CDM. We do a CDM with feedback turned off just to see what CDM behaves like in this limit where we don't have all the sort of feedback processes, similar to the way that there's not present in the ADM. And then we do two ADM simulations for different parameter spaces, mainly with different fine structure constants. So you can see ADM has a larger fine structure constant, so it can cool more efficiently, but only at higher temperatures due to a higher cutoff in the cooling rate. So for example, here is a simulation, and this is just showing cold dark matter and atomic dark matter clumps. As you can see, all this sort of substructure forming, and that's what we want to study. So to do that, we sort of use Rockstar, which is a standard halo finder, and you see, boom, we find our subhalos, and this is what we take to study further. So firstly, I want to talk about how does atomic dark matter change the subhalo structure. So here we've got a plot of just subhalo mass, and then on the y-axis, we have the subhalo radius divided by r half, which is the radius that encloses half the subhalo mass. And you can see this is sort of metric for concentration, or how much matter is sort of compactified in the inner radius of the subhalo. And so you can see there's sort of three vague groupings, which we sort of talk about in our paper. And so down here, we have what we call the CDM-like subhalos. And that's because you can see the CDM in blue, most of them have this sort of low compactness, and we find a lot of subhalos in both ADM simulations down in this region, but these are the subhalos that don't contain much atomic dark matter. Up here we call what ADM dominated, and you can see these are extremely compact, and they're found with a lot high concentration of atomic dark matter in these subhalos, but they're also found mostly in the disk. So it appears that these subhalos are actually formed by a region of the atomic dark matter disk fragmenting off and forming these subhalo structures. So this isn't this sort of the standard sort of bottom-up hierarchy of subhalo formation that we think about in cold dark matter. But sort of the main interesting subhalos I want to talk about in this talk is what we call the ADM enhanced compactness. So these are subhalos that are sort of CDM subhalos out in the sort of galactic, in the galactic halo, but they do have a sort of, a portion of atomic dark matter that leads them to form compactness values higher than we'd expect in CDM. And these are all out in sort of the outer regions of the galaxy. And so this is what we want to study is how does ADM change these subhalo properties if they're slightly more compactified. Cool. And so first thing, one thing we'd look at is the radial distribution of the subhalos. As you can see, so the ADM does tend to have a bit of an effect on the total amount of subhalos formed. But the one thing I want to sort of stress and what we're interested in is down here, as you can see, even though, say, ADM2 forms much less, many less subhalos, it still forms the same amount at these inner regions and even are enhanced. And this is even more obvious for ADM1 forming or having many more subhalos in this sort of inner 125 kiloparsec region. And so to study this a bit more, we started to look at the orbital parameters of these subhalos. And so first here, we've just got distribution plots of the epicenters. And so you can see for the cedium-like subhalos, so these are just the sort of standard subhalos we find, you see, get a peak at 300, which is the virial radius of the host galaxy, but they're all pretty similar between simulations. When we focus on the enhanced compactness subhalos, which are mainly found in the ADM1 and CDMNF, they're biased to much smaller values, and they're pretty much only below 200. So it appears what could be going on is that because of this enhanced compactness, these subhalos are able to survive closer pericentric passages. And sort of that allows them to sort of be perturbed to these smaller orbits. And so to sort of study that, investigate that a bit more, we looked at their pericenters too, of course. And so you can see here, these enhanced compactness halos do have much smaller pericenters and are able to survive sort of pericentric passages within sort of 25 kiloparsecs. And we can see none of, in CDM, only a few are able to do that. And so why we find this quite interesting or sort of exciting is if we're, if there's many more dark matter subhalos sort of passing close to the galactic center or like around the neighborhood of the disk, this could be very interesting for future stellar stream studies. And lastly, I'll just talk about the satellite galaxies. And so if we have satellite galaxies with sort of more matter concentrated in the inner regions, that's quite interesting for velocity curves. So here we've just plotted the R max value, which is the position of the peak of the velocity curve, and V max here is the sort of extent of that maximum velocity. And as you can see in the blue here, we have our CDM simulation, and in the sort of purpley shaded tint is our ADM1 and 2 simulations determined by the cross and triangle points, and that shading is indicating how much atomic dark matter is included in those subhalos. As you can see, there's quite a good correlation between the maximum velocity and the amount of atomic dark matter captured in those subhalos. And then just as a bit of a comparison, we looked at the, so these are RMAX and VMAX taken from this Kaplinghat et al. Paper. And so you can see that that sort of matches in the sort of vague parameter space of our CDM. I mean, there's a lot more going under the hood. I don't want to do a direct comparison, but I'm just saying in terms of like favored parameter space by current observations, ADM is forming all these compact subhalos, so we're pretty much unable to reproduce what is found in just sort of CDM simulations because they are so compact and so, yeah. So I don't know how I'm doing for time, but I'll just leave the...
Perfect.
Sweet. I'll just leave those conclusions up. But essentially, the big takeaway is that I sort of didn't stress this, but all those simulations were just run with 6% of dark matter being atomic dark matter. As we've seen, there's already very large differences being caused by this small subfraction. And so we want to start doing some high-risk simulations of isolated field dwarf galaxies to sort of further explore this sort of mass range. Then also mention stellar streams for the sort of effect of the subhalo populations. Thank you.
Stuff that you talked about turning on and off with these simulations.
So sort of why did we choose to include a CDM, no feedback?
So what is the feedback that's included in the CDM version that's not included in the other versions?
So CDM is just sort of the standard Fire 2 module of feedback. So that's the Supernova mainly. I'm sure there's more.
And
so in the other ones, that's a baryon effect, right? So
like, yes.
So the other ones should.
ADM 1 and 2, the standard model feedback is turned on and included properly as we would expect. So yeah, the CDM no feedback, we turned it off just to see if standard model baryons are unable to go supernova. It's interesting to see how that would give effect to a subpopulation of your dark matter having that same behavior. And so for example, here you can see that there's quite a lot of subhalos that have this enhanced compactness in the CDM NF. And that's just because without feedback, your standard model's like adiabatic contraction has sort of like not counted by anything. So that's why you're also able to form these enhanced compactness subhalos.
Okay, so it's looking at another mechanism for getting enhanced compactness.
Yeah.
You don't do CDM subhalos per that black line, which I guess is a resolution effect. But how come you can produce ADM?
Right, good. So that dashed line is essentially, so in our subhalos, each subhalo has at least 50 particles. And so CDM and the ADM particles do just have a different mass threshold. So here we don't produce any CDM subhalos below that line because that line is essentially 50 CDM particles. Since the ADM particles are lighter, that's what that sort of dotted line is representing. And so it's not directly just a 50. Wait, I think I have it on my... So here, this is a sort of more background into Rockstar and what we're using, but we use this threshold cut for the subhalo sort of if we wanted to include it in our simulation. And so essentially it is roughly to do with the number of particles in a subhalo, but it's also weighted to the fraction of ADM and CDM. Because there is this uncertainty that if you have like 49 ADM particles and one CDM particle, yes, that's 50 particles in a subhalo, but then that one CDM particle is making up like 10% of your halo mass. You're very dominated by one particle, and we want to exclude those subhalos, which was done using this cut. And then in the limit that you just have one type of particle, it reduces to the standard sort of 50 number cut.
Is there something so all your very compact ADM subhalos fall below the resolution limit of the CDM?
Mm-hmm. So you don't... Sorry?
Do you physically expect that to happen? Is that like a resolution effect?
These subhalos only contain ADM, so they're able to be sort of picked up at smaller mass scales. The CDM should continue down here, like in that sort of like we're just not able to see them because of resolution effects. Would we still form these?
Yeah.
I believe so. So are you saying that by increasing the resolution, would those disappear? I don't see why that would be the case, because they're above the resolution of the ADM. So it shouldn't be a resolution effect.
And they are not, say, surrounded by CDM particles.
They're in this, essentially, as I said, in the galactic disk. And so this, the subhalo finder doesn't associate them as being bound to sort of like the CDM particles in the region.
How long it takes to run the full simulation of
ADM 1? Sandeep was mainly involved with the actual running and babysitting of the simulations. I think it took around like maybe a month to 2 months for this sort of resolution to go to Z equals zero.
Do they have baryons?
Do they have baryons?
Yeah.
Oh, in these subhalos? They're in the disk, so of course there's a lot of baryons around them, but when I looked at if they were like gravitationally bound to these subhalos, they weren't really. I mean, I think maybe these ones, which were sort of like kicked off, but these ones were just essentially co-rotating in the disk with the baryons, so they didn't seem to be too sort of forming their own sort of structure.
Would you be able to tell given the resolution issue? Like, if you cut the dark matter there, you also have a
make, you have a given procedure for canaries. Now, would you actually be able to tell if the host, say, 10 to the 4 solar masses invariants?
If, would I be able to tell if the host...
10 to the 4 solar masses invariants.
So I'm sort of confused by the question.
You also have a resolution cut for the baryons, right?
Yeah, of course. So to form a satellite galaxy, there has to be like 10 or so like stellar baryon particles that are like gravitationally bound to the subhalo sort of structure. And so I think that was around 10 to the 5.5. That was the sort of mass resolution we were sensitive to. And none of those were forming that. So possibly, yes.
Because it's lunchtime.
Yeah, so feel free to ask any questions at lunch.
So let's thank our speaker.